All right, so I hope you've had an opportunity to at least read the first chapter of James. That's where we'll get started in just a minute. Looking there in that text, we'll read just the first couple of words and then talk a little bit of introductory information. But if I'm looking at James chapter 1 and verse 1, the text tells me that James, a bondservant of God and of the Lord Jesus Christ, to the 12 tribes which are scattered abroad, greetings. And so he gives us an introduction. He identifies himself, and he also identifies his audience. So what do we know about James, the author? Okay, so you'll notice, how does he identify himself in the text? He calls himself a bondservant of Christ, right? He's calling himself a Christian, in other words, a servant of Christ. But which James are we talking about? Well, we have a few different options, but one really stands out. Understanding is that this is James, the brother of Jesus. Not the apostle. Why would it not be the apostle James? Yeah, he died pretty early on, right? Acts chapter 12. We also know it's not thought to be James the Less. There is a second James. Nobody ever talks about him. That's why it's called the Less, I guess. But the thought is it's probably not him. Most of the early sources agree that he was the author of the book. What do we know about James, though, the brother of Jesus? I want to look at one text. You can look either in Mark 6 or in Matthew 13. But I want to go to start in chapter 12. Matthew chapter 12, at the very end of that chapter, Matthew lets us know that Jesus' family came to see him. Now, we don't know why. We're not given any kind of information into what they're actually seeking from Jesus, but we do have this short interaction. Verse 46, this is Matthew 12:46. It says, while he was still speaking to the people, that's Jesus speaking, behold, his mother, Mary, and his brothers stood outside asking to speak to him. Now, note one thing real quickly there. That term brothers in the English Standard, that carries the idea of brothers and sisters. It's not just referring to his brothers, although that's translators put brothers, but really it's inclusive of all of his siblings and not just the brothers. Brethren, yeah. So the idea is brothers and sisters. That's the idea from the text, or siblings, maybe modern idea there. But it says his family had come to stand outside. Now, if you go on into chapter 13, it actually identifies the brothers of Jesus, not the sisters, but the brothers. If you go into chapter 13, go all the way to the end, go down to verse 53, and of course, Jesus gives us a series of parables as Matthew records them. And so, the text in 53 says, when Jesus had finished these parables, he went away from there, and coming to his hometown, where was that? Nazareth, right? He went back to Nazareth. He taught them in their synagogue, so that they were astonished and said, where did this man get this wisdom and these mighty works? Is this not the carpenter's son? And of course, that would be, they're referring to Joseph there. And of course, the last time we hear about Joseph is when? At the age of 12, right? When Jesus is, as they think, lost, and they're struggling to find him for 3 days, but he's in the temple teaching. That's the last mention of Joseph. But they still, his hometown notes him as the son of Joseph, right? Yeah, is not his mother called Mary, and are not his brothers James, Joseph, Simon, and Judas. And are not all his sisters with us? Where then did this man get all these things? All right, so we're not getting into the text of what's going on, but it just gives us some information about his family. We know that he had four brothers, and we'll know that the very first one mentioned is James. And then you'll also know he had a brother named Joseph and Simon. And Judas, he's known by another name too. Do you know what the other name is? You should know this one. Jude. So it's an alternate spelling. It's the same name. Jude, Judas. I remember hear tell one time they were talking about the book of Jude and its authorship, or talking about the Bible in general, and one older lady stood up and said, "Isn't that just amazing? Judas, after he killed, after he betrayed Jesus, wrote a book of the Bible." No, that's a different Jude, a different Judas there writing. So we actually have two writings of the brothers of Jesus, James, the book we're studying, and Jude as well. They were both written by his brothers. However, what's interesting is verse 58 clues us into something. It said, "And he did not do many mighty works there because of their unbelief." Now, in general sense, he's talking about the hometown. But what about his brothers? Did they believe Jesus? Go over to John chapter 7, if you will. John chapter 7. And I want to note what's said about his brothers. Oh, if I can get there with you. Give me just 1 second. Sorry. Yeah, it's verse 5. I'm sorry, I'm having a little trouble getting there in my online Bible here. So, John makes a note about the family of Jesus. And what? Well, their lack of belief. Verse 5 tells us, "For not even his own brothers believed in him." So at the time Jesus is performing his ministry, his brothers don't believe in him. Now what's interesting, in this context, what are his brothers trying to get him to do? You may remember in John 7, what are his brothers trying to edge him on or egg him on to do? Anybody remember? If you're in my Gospel of John study, I would really love to hear one of y'all. Yeah, to go into the Feast of Booths or Tabernacles and just announce himself, right? They're like, "Why don't you go on out there?" And I'm paraphrasing. You go back and read the text. But they're like, "Why don't you just go on out and do this?" And what's Jesus' response in verse 6? "It's not my time." There will be a time for that, but right now it's not. But really, them trying to encourage him to do, to go out and to be public at the Feast of Booths, did that come out of a place of belief? It seems to come out of a place of derision. And I'm just trying to give us a mindset of where James is at that time. James, along with his brothers. And so they want him to go ahead and do that. Of course, Jesus doesn't, and they go on to the Feast of Booths. So that's where James is in that moment. Did James remain in that state? No, he didn't, right? How do we know that? Well, he wrote the book of James, that's right. Well, we know that later on he became a believer. Go to Acts chapter 1. Acts chapter 1. And so Judas has committed suicide, which has left his position as an apostle open. And so what are they doing here in this context? What's going on? They're trying to fill that position. And so God has given them a prescription of how to do that. They're to cast lots and who the lots fall on. That's the man chosen to replace Judas. That, of course, falls on Matthias. And he ends up becoming the apostle to fill Judas' spot. But go down to verse 14. Somebody read to help me save my voice. Verse 14, please. This is Acts 1:14. Just in case I didn't say that. All right. So, who are all one in accord? Who are we talking about? Who are all these people? It's the 12 apostles, but is it just them? This seems to be the collection of his disciples in the moment. These are those who have hung tough. And now, this, of course, this number is going to explode in chapter 2. But here at the beginning, we're dealing with a much smaller number. Now, it doesn't give us the exact number, but you do have the 12 there. And then you have the women. Who would be included in the women? Who would we include in that? You'd have who? Yeah. So she's going to get mentioned on her own in a second. Mary Magdalene. Who? So who is she? James and John's mother. And so you have the other Mary. There's another Mary in there. And so you have this collection of women who have been traveling and become disciples as well. And then he mentions Mary, the mother of Jesus, and his brothers. And so at this point, you have the brothers have become believers. Now, what's the test? You know they're more dedicated believers and they're not just hangers-on. Why would you not just have hangers-on at this moment? What just happened? They scattered. They ran away because of the persecution of the Jews and the Romans. And so now is not the time, right? This is kind of the winnowing time. Those who are true believers are those who are sticking around. The disbelievers, of course, have scattered and left. Again, in this text, that brothers, this one's a little bit more like in the Greek, but this might include his sisters as well. So I just want to note that. But who would be among his brothers? Well, James. James is a believer at this point. Now, as we fast forward in time, what I would like to do is in a minute, I want to think about a timeline and where do you put the writing of the letter in amongst the growth of the church. So hold on there just a second, and we'll go that way. So, but what else do we know about James? Is this the last mention of the brothers? Does James get any specific mention within the Bible? Is there any definite information we can know about the brother of Jesus, James? Yeah, and we have to kind of fast forward, don't we? He doesn't get a mention until you get to what point. Does anybody remember what's going on when James comes back up? There's an important thing going on, and we kind of mentioned it this morning in our Bible study. Yeah. So exactly. So you have these Judaizing teachers who are coming through Galatia. They also went through Caesarea, Philippi, and on up to Antioch of Syria, right? And they were teaching this false doctrine. Well, there's a response to that. If you go to Acts 14, let's see. There's one thing. I want to make sure I'm not skipping over something. Hold on just one second. All right. So go to, let's start there. I wanted to look at one other thing. Okay, that's not there. All right, Acts 14, you're dealing with this big issue of doctrine of the gospel and how it should be taught. Of course, Paul is sent to Jerusalem. Actually, let's go on to 15. So you have 14, the issue comes to Paul's attention, right? And he's having to deal with these guys. And so as you get to the chapter 15, it says they come teaching these things. Some men came down from Judea and were teaching the brothers, unless you are circumcised according to the custom of Moses, you cannot be saved. All right, that was their message. That's what they're teaching. And so Paul, of course, gets really upset about this. They're teaching false doctrine. And so he's going to go to Jerusalem and confront this head on. And so verse 6 tells us the apostles and the elders were gathered together to consider this matter. So you have some important Christians, influential Christians in Jerusalem who are discussing this. This is the practice of church discipline, by the way. Acts 19, what's Paul doing? All right. He's going to the group and he's confronting them face to face. He's not hiding behind this. And he wants to solve this issue because it is a real problem. And so he goes there and so they get into this discussion. And if you go down to verse 13. So verse 13, I'm not going to read all this, but I just want to note kind of who those are talking. It says, after they finished speaking, James replied, brothers, listen to me. And he goes on to talk about this issue. The issue is not important for this study, but what does that tell you about James in the church living in Jerusalem? He has some influence. People are looking up to him. Paul will even note in one letter, when he came to Jerusalem, he notes specifically that he met with James, the brother of Jesus. And so he did had gained some notoriety in the church. We see that here. A man who now had become important to the church went from unbelief to now fervent belief. So that's James, kind of a little bit of a background. There's more we could talk about, but I just want to introduce him as a person. Any questions about that?
The other James was killed by Herod.
Yes, in chapter 12. Yes, ma'am. That's the Apostle James. And of course, there's another Apostle James that we don't talk much about, but James the Less. But James, the brother of John, died and was martyred in Acts 12. That's right.
Mm-hmm.
Well, yeah, that's kind of an important part too, and it was probably something. Well, I won't guess. We don't know when he learned how to write, but we know he did, right? But he did come from a common family, a blue collar family, if you will, and so, where did he learn it? I don't know. Did he learn it as a kid? Did he learn it later in life? But we know he did. You know, Paul is kind of the opposite of that. Paul grew up, you know, being trained by the smartest people, and he was taught from an early age. I don't know if James, I mean, I don't think it would be typical at that day for somebody who's a carpenter's son to learn how to read and write. Yeah, and maybe that lends credence that his parents took the time to teach him those things. But we're making assumptions. Yeah. All right, so now the authorship, James, the brother of Jesus, what about a date? Kind of tough to put this. There's some disagreement. But From what I've studied, James is one of the earlier writings. I have seen a date anywhere from 47 to 52. That's kind of the date. So it's kind of a wide range. I'd love to tell you, you know, March of 48, all right? But I can't tell you that. But there is some diversity of thought. Yes?
So how late did they have?
How late? What was the range? 47. The range I have seen in my studies is from 47 to 52. So you got about a five-year window there. Some narrow down into 47. Others will narrow down into 50 to 52. But it is, whether it's 47 or 52, it's an early writing. As far as epistles go, you might know what the first epistles to be written, we believe, are. You might know this. 1 Thessalonians. Paul wrote 1 and 2 Thessalonians, we believe to be his first two writings. And they were written a little bit prior to James, but James would fit right in there, maybe just after. So my point here is, why is that? Why is the date significant? Yeah. But all the letters were written in the miraculous age, right? That's the hence the inspiration, right? So all the letters would necessarily, but I get what you're saying, like that. Yeah, so, and to me, that's where I'm going first. That's why I want to know the date. It puts it in a context. Because if we look at just a general timeline, and again, dates, I can't be exact, so we're approximating some dates here. But in about 33 AD, Jesus goes to the cross, he's buried and resurrects. That's around that time. There's a little difference of opinion of whether that's from anywhere from 30 to 36. There is some diversity of opinion, but about 33, right? So that's about where we are. So if it's written as early as 47, how far are we away? We're still 14 years, right, after the church began. So if we begin to think about this from a timeline perspective and try to put James in his context to see how things are changing. So from 33 until Acts 7 and 8, where is the church located generally? Where do most Christians live? Jerusalem. Right? Even those who have come into the area, it appears, to have stayed in that area. Now, you might have had a few who left, but it seems like in general, the Christians who are being converted remained in Jerusalem. Until when? Until the persecution begins with Saul in Acts 8. Acts 8, 1 through 4, tell us what? This is important contextually. What happens in Acts 8, 1 through 4? You have Paul begin to persecute the church, and the text tells us, I believe it's verse 4, that the Christians, what? Dispersed, right? They went everywhere. And it's fascinating to understand, the very next chapter has to deal with who? The Christians of the dispersion. Where do they go? I wish I had enough room for a map up here. I'd show you that too. But where did they go?
Colossae.
No, not Colossae yet. That's Paul later on. They go just north into what area?
Samaria,
right? They go up into Samaria, where we read about what important evangelist? Philip. Remember, Philip goes into Samaria. He converts a bunch of people, one of those being Simon the magician. But the work in Samaria explodes. The church there is growing like leaps and bounds. It's even grabbed the attention in Acts 9 of what group of people? The apostles. And so they send Peter and John to Samaria to see how the work's going. And that they end up giving them the gifts of the Holy Spirit, laying hands on them at that moment. It's a lot of information, but I think contextually this is important. So you have the church begin to spread out. Also in Acts 9, you have what other narrative taught? I'm sorry, I'm a chapter ahead. I'm sorry, you're right. Let's stay in Acts 8. I said 9, I didn't mean 9. I meant 8. I got everybody confused. Yeah, the eunuch, right? The eunuch's converted. What's significant about that from this standpoint? He's an Ethiopian. So what's that going to do with the gospel? It's going south, and it's going really south. That's important. I think we ought to think about those things. These aren't little things. That's the spread of the gospel. Sorry. Then you get to chapter 9. And you have the conversion of Saul. Of course, then that will lead to Colossae. That will lead to the churches of Galatia and the furtherance of the gospel. And so you have in Acts 7 and 8, I don't know exactly how many years, less than 10 years after AD 33. The next important date is in Acts chapter 10 and 11. This is about... Don't kill me on dates because I'm approximating, but it's about 10 years after the founding of the church. It's a nice gap of time. But what happens in Acts chapter 10 that's really significant to you? The first Gentile convert. Now we're at 43. We're getting closer to the date of his writing, aren't we? Now, if I'm right, again, don't... It can be approximate, a year or two, one way or the other, but it's about a decade. And so as we get closer, we're seeing some things happen. All right, I had Becky and then Jody.
Was the eunuch not in like the Samaritans, not Gentiles?
No, so the eunuch, okay, most likely, where was he coming from? This is important. When Philip joins him in the chariot, he's headed home from where? The temple to worship, which means he was either a Hellenistic Jew living in Ethiopia, or he is a proselyte converted Ethiopian to Judaism. He is not a Gentile in that sense. What was your other one? They are all Jews still. Just Jews. They're Hellenistic Jews living outside of, or Grecian, some would call them, living in that Samaritan area. Roger.
I mean, the Jews didn't really consider
them Jews. Well, we won't get into politics of it, but they were Jews, right? They're not Gentiles. Even though they might look down on second-class Jewish citizens, they're still Jews. If we're going to call them Gentiles, we're going to have to reinterpret the book of Acts, right? But... Yeah, they were still Jews, right? I don't want to get lost in all that. I love talk about it all day long after the class. But the important thing is, in about 43, we have Gentile conversions. That's important because what happens immediately after that? You have Paul and Barnabas going out and going on these missionary journeys, and they're converting Jews, but they're converting Gentiles. And so the Gentiles become an important part. Now, I don't know the date, but what group of believers become very significant in the book of Acts? What church is doing a ton of missionary work? No. Antioch, right? The Antioch church sending out all these missionaries. And what is Antioch? They're Gentile and Jew. It's the first time they're called Christians is in Antioch. So that happens sometime after 43. And then, of course, as you continue reading, you get to the famine that's prophesied. Famine where? In Jerusalem. Where is James? In Jerusalem. That happens sometime after. I don't know the date on that one. But that would have been right around the time, if 47 to 52 is the right date, you're getting really close to the time of the writing. So the background of James is what? All right? You have Christians who are both Jew and Gentile. You have a famine ongoing in Jerusalem, right? You have the work of Paul going throughout the area of Galatia, of Asia Minor, of Macedonia, right? He's doing all that work. James, however, has been where? In Jerusalem. And so, does that make sense? Everybody with me? If you have a question, please don't hesitate to ask. I think it's important when you get to James to think about those things. What's the setting of the writing? Well, that's the time frame we're in. That's as he's writing this letter, some of those ideals are important. Huh? The world is changing.
Jews haven't learned to get used to Gentiles coming in. That's a lot of
And so a writing is important. Can't have apostles in your church family all the time. You need something that's going to be lasting. Now you have the gift of prophecy, but a writing is what? Something you can continue to read over and over and learn from. And so it's in this time that what do the men begin to do? They begin to write and distribute these letters. I think that's important. Good comments, huh?
And to copy them.
Lots of copying. All right, we'll close out. Any other questions before I do? All right, thank y'all for being here and taking this time to study the book of James.